CliffCentral.com.
Yes, indeed. CliffCentral.com on a Thursday morning, and it's time for us to check in on the burning platform this morning. I'm delighted to bring you two people who've been requested as guests for about, the last 2.5 months at very least. I've had a 1,000 emails, probably more comments on social media about, please, these two are two of the people that we really need to hear from. And I'll tell you who they are in a moment, because a lot of people are going to be very satisfied that they managed to coax me into this. I also wanted to hear from these two people, because so much has changed since the last time we spoke to both of them. And we've spoken to them about various things, political, things COVID-related, things socially far more interesting to some than others, the economy, the world. There's plenty to get into. Pumi Mashiko is, of course, here this morning. Pumi and I are there on the burning platform for you almost every week to just make sure that we touch base with some of the most important stuff that's happening in the world and hopefully give you some free-range opinion. And you can obviously throw yours in, too, in the comments. We want to hear from you this morning. Let us know what's going on. It is time for the burning platform. So let me introduce the first of our two guests this morning. It is someone who is well-known to us at CliffCentral.com. He's a social commentator, not like Bulelo, who calls himself a cultural commentator, but he's also somebody who's a returning champion, Dumo Denga, a libertarian, host of the Man Patriot podcast, and somebody who is well known to our audience. So, Dumo, always nice to see you. And am I allowed to say Happy New Year, or are you also very peculiar and particular about people not saying that after a certain date? You don't mind?
No, I don't mind at all. Compliments of the season to everyone.
Thank you, man. Nice to see you.
Yes, nice to see you guys. And yeah, it's always great to be here and looking forward to having a great discussion.
Awesome. The other guest this morning, the other commentator who we're pleased to hear from is Dr. Jonathan Witt, one of those people on the internet with more strong opinions than many can handle. He's constantly pushing the envelope. He's giving people feedback where they need it, whether they like it or not. And it's good to see you, Jonathan. Nice to have you on the show this morning. How have you been? Jonathan, we can't hear you for some reason. I don't know if you're on mute. You're on mute. Unmute yourself.
What a way to start the new year. Good. I'm great. Thank you. Morning, Gareth. And,
good.
Morning, Zuma. And to the woman on top, of course, or the woman above.
Woman above. That's right.
maybe she was the woman on top during December. Gareth, don't judge.
Well, okay, guys, let's just start off with something I've assiduously tried to avoid, but it has become the thing that everybody spoke about at family gatherings over the holidays and continues to be something that fills our headlines. It's something the mainstream media are obsessive about. And I think I'm going to get into trouble for this. I think this pandemic has been over for a couple of months now. I'm going to let you go first, Jonathan. You're a doctor as well as being someone who's very opinionated on this subject. Am I within my rights to say that Omicron is the final death knell and we can now finally move on with our lives? Or is that far too optimistic of you?
Yeah, I mean, we'd like to believe that it's the end. One would think that it would be because normally this is the natural evolution of viruses, certainly respiratory viruses. They tend to infect people. They tend to be more deadly and less infectious as they start out and then become more infectious and less deadly as they go through to the end of their sort of phase. I was on your show last year a couple of times, but at the beginning of last year, the end of the previous year, but just before Joe Biden came into power, and I said, pandemic's over because right. Biden can't afford it. Now, I was right about one of those things. It wasn't over, but he couldn't afford it. It should be over. It should already be over. There's no justification for our state of disaster, certainly. You can look at the numbers, the number of people dying of Omicron from the beginning of Omicron to now. So pretty much from before December. So since our Delta wave ended has been below the number of people who die daily in this country from diseases like TB, the number of children who die daily from things like diarrhea. Mm-hmm. We should have left this behind long ago. The people who have psychiatric illnesses from being terrified for 2 years by the media obviously are going to have a problem with this probably for the rest of their lives. It's over.
What do you think, Duma? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think The pandemic has been problematic, but I think, yeah, with regards to the lockdowns and the state of disaster, it pretty much needs to end. I mean, if you look at the stats with regards to the amount of recoveries and the deaths and so forth, I mean, our recovery rate now, right now, as a percentage of total cases recorded, is at about 93%. And if you want to, and that recovery rate could actually go up to actually 98% when you look at it from a perspective of closed cases.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is that this virus has caused some damage, but many people have recovered. And also the lockdowns, I mean, were unnecessary, in my opinion, because it caused so much social damage. And, you know, and you talk about social damage, there were people that suffered from, gender-based violence and so forth.
And isolation. Like that. So, I mean, we haven't even begun to count the cost of things like that, right?
Exactly. And then there were people that missed treatments that would have been alive today, but they died because they missed it and so forth. So I think what I see is that, look, the government can't really manage a pandemic of this nature. The virus will take its course. Yes, we can have our own precautions from a personal level, but when you try to manage it the same way the government tried to do it now, it's very problematic. Because at the time, when this thing started, everyone just thought, yeah, it'll just be 2 weeks. But, you know, now it's been over 2 years, and it's getting close to 2 years, sorry. And now
657 days
to flatten the curve.
657
so
days.
Pumi, I mean, listen, Jonathan and Dumo and Pumi, you guys are all, I've had you all on the podcast before, and we've discussed this a number of times. Some people may be bored with talking about this, but there is also an evolution in all of us in terms of our position on this from the get-go. No one has been 100% right from the very beginning. I think in the beginning it made sense for us to all be cautious, to make careful decisions because we didn't know what we were dealing with. But with the benefit of hindsight now, and this is where you all three have to do something which I know you're not in love with doing. Nobody is. No human being likes to do this. Are there things that you got completely wrong that you now look back on and you go, ugh, okay, I got this right, I got that right, I got that right. This I was completely wrong about. And just like politicians never admit their mistakes because it costs them at the ballot box, are there things that we can all admit, I know there are for me, that we got wrong, that with the benefit of hindsight, you can now go back and say, all right, I screwed that up, but I'm going to be humble enough to say, that was a mistake, this is where I could have made a better decision. Pumi, do you want to start off? Because I know, like, you've been on the show with me almost every single week, and a lot has changed. We've discovered so much more about the virus. We've discovered so much more about the reactions to the virus.
So I think, firstly, you guys aren't the only ones that are saying that the pandemic is over. I mean, for the past 2 days now, almost all the news coming out from everywhere, you know, everyone's reporting that with Omicron, the virus kind of has pushed it out of the pandemic status. And it's coming out of Europe, it's coming out of everywhere. Everyone is now reporting that.
Yes.
That because, as Jonathan says, and this is the life cycle, right? It's the life cycle of viruses. But when I think about where we started and where we are, I was always cautious. The best thing for me was the fact that I just got to stay home. I didn't have to go shopping as much. I didn't have to do a whole lot of things, but I'm lucky. I'm lucky because I have access to all of those things. Remember, even at the beginning, Gareth, we spoke a lot about this and the fact that, I mean, I hated homeschooling, but I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to have my child over there far away from me and on a device with teachers and I could carry on working from where I was. So I mean, when it comes to me and that experience, I was able to relatively carry on. Although I do think that the worst thing that has happened to South Africa is working from home, because we just don't have the tools for it. We're not geared up for it. We don't have the management style for it. So basically, like, South Africans just kind of stopped working.
Well, you can see it in our economy. We've suffered enormously from the effects of the lockdown, probably more than we did from the effects of the pandemic.
And it's not just the public sector. I think we very unfairly kind of go, oh yeah, people in the public sector are lazy, they don't work, blah, blah, blah. But actually, even in the private sector, I know many people who have business that has now taken 8 months to get through a system that would normally have taken 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It has, it's just, it's been a nightmare.
Oh, well, there is no controversy in saying that we are undeniably worse off financially in South Africa than we've probably ever been, thanks to this pandemic in large part. But it's also been a convenient excuse for many people. And what we have learned is something Duma referred to a little bit earlier on, and that is that governments can't fight pandemics, you know, and there's still governments in the world that are trying, by the way. But Jonathan, how about you? What do you think you got wrong?
Well, not much, Gareth. Sorry, I'm going to be a bit arrogant here, but the reality is that I've faced 2 years almost of being shouted down, of literal persecution. I've had people go after my job, after my career, after my qualifications, after my registration as a doctor, for saying things that the CDC is now admitting, for saying things that Fauci is now admitting, you know, for saying things that the US and UK government yesterday admitted, that the lab leak is the most likely place from where this virus came, for example. The one thing I did get wrong, which my detractors love to point out, is I posted a reply to someone in February, early February of 2020, when the virus was just sort of starting to roll out. Bearing in mind, this was before WHO declared a pandemic, and it was when Nancy Pelosi was still calling people racist if they didn't go to Chinatown and celebrate the Chinese New Year. I had posted a tweet that I thought that the virus would sort of spread but plateau quite quickly within a few weeks and then basically disappear. Now, the reason behind that is a couple of things. Firstly, we've had multiple of these sort of scares before, which have done exactly that. I'm not sure if anyone remembers Zika virus, not a respiratory virus, but Zika virus was meant to shut down the Olympic Games. H1N1, the swine flu, was meant to end the world in 2008-09, but they couldn't have that happening to Barack Obama as he had just taken office. So, you know, there's a lot of politics behind this. And the truth is, you know, you say things like, well, we've learned that we can't do this. We haven't learned anything. In 2019, the WHO had a report on, in fact, an entire document which advised all governments globally on how to respond to a pandemic. And that document said very simple things. Never lock down a population. Never make a population wear masks. Don't close schools. Make sure children are as unaffected as possible. These were some of the guidelines from the WHO in 2019 and up until the end of 2019. In 2020, when this happened, that all changed. Nobody knows why that happened. There's speculation, obviously. The lab leak now seems very likely, in fact, that this virus came out of the Wuhan lab being funded by gain-of-function testing, which has been shown to be true by Rand Paul in his cross-questioning of Anthony Fauci in Congress. And, you know, the Chinese then dictated, who had put Tedros, the head of the WHO, into power, and they then dictated how this was going to be. And everyone hopefully remembers that the Chinese released propaganda videos of people literally just walking in the street and then suddenly collapsing and dying, and then hazmat, people dressed in hazmat suits walking up to them and prodding them with sticks, being spread all over the world, and everyone suddenly panicking. Two specific images coming out of Italy, one of some body bags never confirmed to be from COVID, and then one of an ICU that, from my perspective, having worked in ICUs, didn't look to be that severe, but that was spread all over the world on CNN, on Loop. And so they started with the fear and they started with the terror. And there's a lot of things that sort of came to a nidus in a way. You know, the media was dying. The mainstream media was dying, still is. But what was happening is their numbers were at an all-time low. Trump was about to go out of office. You can see how this has affected CNN. They basically have no viewers, sub a million viewers on most of their shows.
Right.
And suddenly everyone was in fear, and the idea of people staying home was wonderful. I mean, that's done amazing things for the likes of the news organizations, for the likes of Netflix, etc.
It kept them alive for a little while longer, but their projected outcome is still fairly pessimistic.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think there were a number of predictions. There's still things we're doing wrong today that I said, and you know, as I said, some things are slowly coming out. Other things will come in time. One of them is I'm COVID positive. If you test positive, but are inverted commas asymptomatic. Mm. We don't do that for any other disease. You don't go and get an HIV test that comes back positive and you say I have AIDS. That's not how this works. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus that causes the COVID, the disease. If you are asymptomatic and you test positive, then you may have SARS-CoV-2 in your body in some way. And I've explained on your show how you might not actually be infected. But the point is that's a positive test for a virus. It's not a positive test for a disease. And when we start eventually pulling ourselves away from that link of saying we're COVID positive, and doctors do this as well, you're COVID positive immediately of having a test, we hopefully will start moving away from some of the hysteria. The CDC has in fact come out and admitted that a positive test does not mean you're positive.
Yeah.
I said that in November 2020.
The CDC have gone from don't wear masks to wear masks to don't wear masks. You know, and again, yes. nobody
got, and now it's don't wear masks.
Nobody got this 100% right. I do want to go to one other aspect of this, which I think is worth mentioning, and then we've got to move on because I do think people are like totally COVIDed out. But you brought this up, Jonathan, and I know that Dumo has some strong opinions on this too. The idea that people who were speculating quite rationally about some of the things going on, that these people presented a threat to public health and that they were deemed misinformants or that they were deemed agents of disinformation, this has been, with the benefit, again, of a couple of months of things changing and some hindsight, this has been a very, very poor position for people to take up, whether they're in authority positions, whether they're people who run the social media networks, whether it's the news media in general with fact checkers and all that. These people have really done a terrible job of establishing any kind of credibility and of reinforcing the trust we have in our institutions, frankly, by telling people that they're misinforming or that they're disinforming and by putting COVID checks on anything. By the way, I don't know if you've noticed, but suddenly on social media in the last 2 weeks, everything's changed because now if you post jokes or memes about COVID, that little warning isn't coming up. It's just suddenly as if everyone's decided, oh, okay, we got to change the narrative on this, which is suspicious. You know, a lot of conspiracy theorists, in inverted commas, have been proven to be right. And some of the most credible news networks and agencies that we should be believing, because they're the ones who supposedly have the institutional trust in them, have been completely discredited. It has been a very big learning curve and a very fast learning curve for us over the last few months. Your comments on that, Dumo, and then Pumi, you got some questions.
Right. With regards to the fact checkers and so forth, these individuals, in my opinion, they've taken the position to be the arbiters of truth. And guess what? They didn't tell the truth, or at least they didn't tell us everything. And whenever someone said something, they would shut them down because they felt that the effects or the social effects of it would be undesirable, even though what was being said was actually truthful. And now this is actually starting to unravel and people are starting to lose trust. I mean, we've seen like they use one-liners and conversation enders such as, you know, trust the science, I believe the science, or I'm following the science and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I think over time people have just become numb to this now. And whenever they hear something of this nature, even though the scientific method has its value, they just don't want to hear more about it because, hey, they lost their jobs and stuff like that, and they're forced to wear masks, and some of them, they may even have to have vaccine mandates and so forth. But I think at the end of the day, these fact checkers have just lost their credibility just because people can simply go on the internet and check the facts for themselves and say, well, why don't you mention the recovery rate? You're always talking about the deaths and the cases, but what about the recovery rate? It's because of that. And I think now people are just going to do their own research, even though these fact checkers say don't do your own research, follow the science.
What do you say to that, Pums?
Look, I think the only thing that, and it's not a comment, it's not a question, just a comment. I'm waiting to see what happens next, right? I'm waiting to see what will happen next with our command council and our state of disaster. I'm waiting to see what comes out of our president in the next, if we're going to have a family meeting anytime soon. I mean, I don't even know what level we're on now. Well, I don't even know what level of anything.
Nobody knows. And the nice thing about being in South Africa is nobody cares. Nobody cares about what level we're on anymore. You walk around, people are putting on masks because they realize they're not going to be allowed into shops. But otherwise, nobody's interested in this thing anymore.
So that's, I mean, that's the thing that's fascinating for me to watch as I see on TV. I mean, all the New Year celebrations all over the world, people were like out in their numbers. People were at the gatherings. People were having fun.
I want to refer to something you just said now, Pums, and it made me think. Governments all over the world and political leaders and politicians who are maybe standing for re-election and that kind of thing, the incentive structures for these people are so bad that they will do whatever gets them the votes and whatever makes them popular. I mean, case in point, you mentioned New Year. So Cyril, on New Year's Eve, decides the curfew's gone. He didn't do that because the scientists suddenly came in with new information. He did that because he knew it was going to cost him in a party where he's already losing and where the party's losing and where they've just come out of a pretty awful election for themselves. He realized that the ordinary citizen in this country is going to be like, screw you. First of all, it's not going to be policeable, if that's a word.
Shame, man. It was terrible for Peggy Cele. He was so amped up. He was so ready for it all. And then it just, like, within a couple of hours, everything was gone. I mean, it's just... I don't know. Poor Cyril.
To bring it back into the South African context, Gareth, you know, you talk about the National Command Council. Cyril didn't do that with any evidence. He actually did. I mean, in the real sense of the word, and we've had a problem with the distortion of words over the last 20 years, but in the real sense of the word progressive, our MAC, our Medical Advisory Committee, actually released one of the most progressive medical advisories in the world about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And it basically said that our entire approach has failed. That contact tracing doesn't work, which we knew once you get to a point where you overwhelm your resources to do so, it doesn't work. They also admitted that this is mainly aerosol spread, which means social distancing, those Perspex screens, masks, you know, most of the stuff is basically just theater. So they did all of this. They gave that through to the Department of Health. The Department of Health actually then reacted to it and said, right, so we're going to stop all of this stuff and we're going to, you know, take away the 10-day quarantine if you've been around someone with COVID, if you have no symptoms, continue your life. It was a very progressive approach. It wasn't perfect, certainly, but it was a very progressive approach. It was medically scientific.
So, are you saying we finally got to a point where we were sensible?
No. Well, we did. And then what happened was a number of journalists went nuts and they published a whole bunch of articles and pressured government. And about a week later, government came out and said, we are pausing the advisory and the change to our guidelines because of the media concerns we have received. So this is tail wagging the dog kind of stuff. We have idiots who couldn't basically get high enough marks to be anything better than a journalist dictating the lives of hundreds of thousands and millions of South Africans. And, you know, something just to point out in the South African context, you know, the laptop class here love to say, well, I was at home and I worked from home. It's great. I like my house. And, you know, I watched a bit of Netflix and I spent more time with my kids. Great for you. That's your experience as one of the middle class, one of probably about 10 to 12 million people in this country. And it's wonderful you had that experience. But the reality is that the majority of people in this country who aren't on the other side in Stellenbosch on a wine farm, but are at the bottom end of things, they had a horrible experience. Yeah. They've lost their jobs and they haven't got them back.
Pumi did say, like, we're lucky if we can say that stuff. She did say that in her opening comments.
No, it's not a criticism on Pumi. It's a point that this is a sort of thought pattern.
We're the laptop class, and these four people on your screen right now.
And I also, but I also want to point out that, like, I spend and have spent my entire work career working majoritarily with the lower class of this country. And I don't mean that in a condescending fashion. I've worked with the poor my entire career. And so, you know, I have an exposure that the average person walking into an office in Sandton Monday to Friday and spending their weekends having briars with their friends doesn't get. And I have been astonished at the complete lack of compassion and empathy being shown by people who have the loudhailers, because the people who are the poorest in this country do not have access to write columns in News 24. And so the perspective being reported on is we're saving you from a virus. Well, you condemn many people to poverty and you condemn more people to late diagnosis of cancer, as we're seeing from stats in the UK. You think that's different for South Africa? It's not.
I do hear you. And I think we've kind of, without, you know, embellishing this any further, I think that the media do have an enormous responsibility to bear, and they will pay the price because they're going to lose audience over time. That will figure itself out. There are market dynamics that will come into play, and those people who do things like pressure the government from a media point of view with a tail wagging the dog, there will be a cost for them in the long run. Don't worry about them. I want to move on to some other stuff because Pumi wants to bring up Lindiwe Sisulu, but before we get into that, do any of you believe that that poor homeless man that they arrested in Cape Town is responsible for setting fire to Parliament? I'm asking everybody this. His name is Zandile Mafe. Do you think that that man on his own set fire to our Parliament? And what do you reckon, like in a very concise way, might have gone down there? Pums, what do you think?
So I really don't know what to think about that story, other than the fact that I'm astonished at the efficiency of what happened there. So within a couple of hours, right, this man was arrested, he was charged, he was standing in front of a judge, and I was just like, this is incredible, this is incredible. Today, we are 10 days after the Zondo report has come out.
Yeah.
10 days.
No one's been charged.
Millions and millions, millions, I mean, over the numbers, and I have the numbers for you, I'll share them with you later. The number of documents that are evidence, hard evidence of what happened, of fraud, of tax evasion, of theft, of lying, of misrepresentation, all of that, names, dates, 10 days later, not a single person is standing in the dock. Not a single person has been charged. Not a single person has been. I'm like, wow, wow. It's astounding for me. So on the one hand, you have a man who, what we all saw was, by all accounts, like confused, doesn't know what's happening. The man is in front of a judge, charged. The state machinery has swooped down on him. And here on the other side, billions of rands of taxpayer money has been squandered and stolen. The evidence is there. The documentary evidence is there. This is not hearsay. This is not some kind of like investigation that still needs to go down.
Not a one.
Yeah. Not a one.
Absolutely.
So like,
Dumo, your comments on this poor, this poor guy? Yeah, I mean, listen, Pumi, I just see people nodding on the screen, and I see that in the comments too. What do you say, Dumo?
Look, you know, we live in a world where anything can happen. So I just said, look, it may be possible that he did it, but it just looks highly unlikely. You know, just given what Pumi said, the efficiency of how this person got charged and how soon they found him and everything like that. I feel that there is, you know, to you know, translate directly from Zulu, you know, something is hitting the water, basically. So something's fishy. There's just it just doesn't seem correct, in my opinion. So we'll have to see. And I know I think Dalum Poff is defending him as well. So it also adds more to the theater.
Well, that's not very good for him. But, sorry, Gareth. I know you've got a thing, but not the greatest advocate we have.
All right. So Jonathan, you also seem incredulous when Pumi was talking.
Well, I mean, I, of course, went to KGB training camp with that guy. So, you know, I know him well. When we were learning special explosives and arms, he was top of his class. No, I mean, you know, I think what's happened is our government's very interesting. They sort of sometimes want to please, and they kind of realize what will please, but they don't have the competence to carry that out. So you have, you know, the July riots, for example, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody kind of is responsible for anything there, even though there's a claim of, you know, insurrection, which was nonsense. But regardless, no one sort of gets arrested. And then they say, no, we've arrested sort of 10 or 12 people, but we have no idea who these people are. And everyone's like, oh, come on, stop bullshitting us. So then Parliament fire happens and they go, you know what? People really like it when you find out who's responsible. Let's find someone, you know? And I think that's kind of what happened. You know, and once the guy was arrested, the rock was sort of rolling down the hill, and it was almost unstoppable. I think Dali and Porfu even will be able to get this guy off relatively easily. And you know, we'll make a mockery of the state again. But the reality is that Pumi's 100% right. You know, we've had this NPA ready for years now, probably more than a decade. Which has, through multiple prosecutors, you know, heads of the NPA, who've not acted in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's the truth about justice in the country. I'm not convinced most people believe there is justice. We do see it taking place occasionally. You know, if some guy murders his family with an axe, he goes to prison. But if some guy murders the entire economy with an axe, nothing happens to him.
Yeah. No, the bigger your crime in this country, the likelier you are to get away with it. Let's just talk about Lindiwe Sisulu and her comments and what she's been up to this week. Pumi, this is something that you wanted to bring into the conversation. Go ahead and sketch the scenario for those people who are not as well informed.
And I think by now, everybody has heard something about what Lindiwe. So she wrote this article, open opinion piece in the Sunday papers.
Uh-huh.
And when I read it, I was just like, "Wow, whoa, what's happening? Is this like a public resignation letter? Is Lindiwe Sisulu resigning?"
Yeah, what did she say? Because she was very critical of the ANC, and most people know just that as the top line.
No, she wasn't critical of the ANC. She was critical of the Constitution.
Oh boy, okay.
And the judiciary.
She was critical of the Constitution and the judiciary, and. But like explicitly so. So that's why I was kind of like, okay, so is she resigning? Is this her saying I'm resigning? And I'm obviously she's like firing a salvo at Cyril and saying I'm throwing my hat in here. I'm going to run for presidency. As we know, I told you guys this year is going to be, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be hectic. There's like an electoral, there's elections happening in the ANC in December. So we're going to see everything happening. We're going to see like the slow meltdown of this party over the next 11 months. So she's obviously firing a missile and it's got a return address.
But
also in kind of saying, is this, she calls the Constitution a neoliberal document that is like what? That is out of touch with the reality of the poor people. What the fuck? This woman, to get her job, she has to swear. To get her job, she has to swear on the Constitution to uphold the Constitution.
Right.
So to get her job, actually, this like swearing to uphold the Constitution, she's been doing since she was 40 years old.
Yeah.
She became an MP when she was 40 years old in Nelson Mandela's government.
Mm-hmm.
Like all these years, problem for her.
Let's and just also, like, you know,
and her salary.
You got to take it from whence it comes. My top line comment on this is that, first of all, the only reason that we even know Lindiwe Sisulu exists is because of her surname. She has not been a competent minister in any way, shape, or form. And listen, the standards are pretty low in our country for ministers, but she's never really excelled. She's been in a number of different portfolios. She's never really blown anyone's lights out. She's been proffered as a candidate for X, Y, and Z. Deputy president was mentioned a couple of times. President's been mentioned. She's just quite an unimpressive human being. And I think this is maybe just a desperate last cry for attention. And like, please take me seriously. Somebody recognize me for more than just being a Sisulu. And I don't think it's worked.
Look, everybody's talking about her now.
But not necessarily in a very positive or useful light. I mean, far as I can
tell. Well, what she also has effectively said is she's also kind of like gone, she's going to fly the flag for the RET faction within the ANC.
Well,
that's
luck.
What she's saying.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I want to raise a point about this RET nonsense. You know, there's sort of this back and forth feedback that goes on between the political parties and the mainstream media, and it's not really consistent with anything that's happening on the ground with most people. So RET, for example, is meant to be all these people who want to have radical economic transformation, and they want to go about this process by a whole bunch of things, like repossessing farms, for example, without compensation. Great. If that's the principle and the concept, and then they float the idea, and then some people get angry and some people get happy and you know, get clicks for the media, so they like it. And then obviously there's some support, so some of the politicians run with it because it'll get them more support, etc. But the reality is that the entire ANC is a RET faction, if you want to be honest. The reality is look at our economy. We have radically economically transformed this economy from a successful one in the early 2000s to a failing economy now, to a country that may not make it another 10 years from an economic perspective. Cyril Ramaphosa is RET himself. No one has done more to RET our economy than Cyril Ramaphosa. Between his reaction to COVID and killing jobs, to the way he approaches the farm
expropriation.
Expropriation without compensation, thank you. And we all know that Cyril has ideology. Unlike Jacob Zuma, who was a thief, is a thief, Cyril is a thief with ideology. That is far, far, far more dangerous. Cyril is a communist at the end of the day. I'm tired of everyone pretending like this isn't a fact. This is where he comes from. This is what he is. This is what he believes. The man quotes Marx. Can we just accept that this man is incredibly dangerous because he wants to steal the money just like every other politician, but he wants to do it while implementing Marxist type policies? This is what is so dangerous about him. And frankly, if you offered me Didi Mabuza or Lindiwe Sisulu or a number of these other people over Cyril, I'm taking them. In fact, I'm taking Zuma over Cyril right now for a very simple reason. Jacob Zuma will steal billions of rands from this country every year, but he will not implement policy which grinds the economy to a halt because he understands that makes it more difficult for him to steal those billions. Cyril Ramaphosa doesn't care. He will steal, but he will also throw spokes into the cogs of the economy because he believes in the Marxist project.
Duma, you're nodding very enthusiastically, and you talk about this on your podcast a lot too. What do you think of, first of all, Pumi's comments on Lindiwe Sisulu, which we haven't given you a chance to reflect on, and then what Jonathan's just said about Cyril?
I think with Sisulu's comments, I think it serves two purposes. I think the first one is, you know, it's to seek attention, let everyone know that, listen, I'm going to, you know, try compete for the presidency. And the second one, I think also is to try to protect the ANC. I think what she was trying to do in that, with that letter was try to like get everybody kind of angry again because, you know, the Zondo report has been released. Now we have to take, the attention off the party, because it's pointless for her to say that I'm going to run for the presidency, but she doesn't like to defend the party. So then she questions the constitution and all of that type of stuff and then makes a lot of contradictions along the way. So I think those are the two purposes that it served. And it's similar to what the CCP does when the economy goes bad. They start to blame, you know, the United States and everything like that, and they push their propaganda. So that's exactly what she was trying to do.
Okay.
And then I think with regards to Ramaphosa, Ramaphosa has ideology. And he said on many occasions that he will actually support what do you call it? Expropriation of land without compensation. And there's this plan that they have. I forgot now. It's not called the New Dawn. It just left me now.
But oh, the 2030. That's yes.
I forgot the name. Why could I? It just escaped me now.
Plan. National Development.
Well, it's not the NDP. It's something more long term than that.
I don't believe the party to control. They've come up with another plan. I don't think there's anyone who's planning anything further than
the problem yesterday. Is nobody reads the National Development Plan. If you read the actual documents behind it, written by Rob Davies, who is a dyed-in-the-wool communist, it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. It reads like something from Soviet Russia.
Rob Davies, with all due respect, Rob Davies looks like something from Soviet Russia. So,
but he has power inside the ANC. That's the problem. He writes a lot of their policy.
So, to finish your point, because you hadn't finished making your point about Cyril, what are your feelings about this RET faction and what Jonathan said and what Pumi's thrown in there as well?
Yeah, I think the ANC has a long-term plan. You know, they want to turn South Africa into a communist state, but they want to do it slowly. So I think Ramaphosa wants to be some sort of catalyst towards that. And already, as I said before, he has, expressed his commitment to that plan. So I think ultimately he's going to try push it as much as he can. And he said it on many occasions as well that he is loyal to the ANC and, you know, he puts the ANC first. So definitely, I think the whole ANC really is RET.
So you'll be pleased to know, though, that with Lindy Weir throwing her hat there in the ring, on Saturday was the ANC's, like, big grand gesture that they have every year, of their birthday celebration. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, there was the rare occasion of Cyril Ramaphosa actually taking questions from the media. It was a little like media. It was spectacular to watch, especially because one of the journalists did ask Cyril about a second term. And guess what? Cyril expressed his shock at this question. Of him going for a second term and what that might be like. It was vintage Cyril.
You know,
vintage Cyril.
Again, guys, there seems to be no feedback loop within the ANC except from within the ANC. So in other words, it's like the NEC talk to the NEC. They don't ever go outside. They don't ever seem to have any meaningful research done. They're always shocked, not just the president, but everyone. Like Jesse Duarte is always shocked. You know, they're always horrified at like when people don't turn out in their droves in the elections for them and when their popularity keeps slipping. No one seems to be in a position to give them any feedback. And despite what Jonathan and Dumo say about, you know, the economy and how they've ruined it and how they continue to have plans which are completely unrealistic for the future of the country, the numbers keep slipping for them. Is there any opportunity for the ANC to right the ship? Pumi, you've answered this before, so I'm not going to ask you again because you're probably tired of saying you say it's over for them. But if you guys also agree with Pumi, what's next? Like, what's going to happen next? We've got these local municipal elections just behind us, which was only 2.5 months ago. Let's not forget. What comes next? What can we look forward to this year? What can we be afraid of this year? What should we be worried about?
Sure, there's a lot to be worried about, in my view. The problem is we're coming out of an economic slump, which arguably is global. It's not South African, and it's not only caused by us, although we could have behaved differently. Hyperinflation is probably coming. And that's going to hurt everyone, but it's going to hurt us really badly. If you look at the number of people already battling to pay their bills, and you look at the number of people in debt, that's going to cause major, major problems. And there is precedent for this. 98, 99, around about there, we had interest rates approaching 20% in this country. Now, if you have a car loan or a bond, consider if your monthly payments, interest payments, double from where they are now. Yeah. Can you afford that? The reality is so we're going to have a number of issues. However, there's also going to be some positive stuff because as we get through COVID now, you'd see everything opening up. So there are going to be increases in job numbers and there are going to be increases in tourism money and there is going to be all of that, which will make the ANC look a little bit good for a while. And I don't know how close that comes to the next election, but it may very well do that. You've seen the rebound in America, for example, in jobs. not completely, but in the millions there. So I think that's going to happen. That is obviously not under the ANC's control. That's just going to happen naturally. I don't think the ANC can necessarily save itself. But, you know, we go back to these election problems, which is whether people see an alternative and think the alternative is viable or not. Mm. I'm not particularly buoyed by what happened in the last elections. I know other people are. I don't think we saw anything great. There is a lot of worry for the future.
Duma, your comments on this?
Yeah, this year is going to be a very interesting one. I still stand by the position that the ANC needs to break up the tripartite alliance. I think that if the ship is sinking, you know, SACP, COSATU, and everyone there, please go your own way. That'll definitely assist the ANC in that regard. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but
probably not.
I think at some point it should, just for their own benefit. But yeah, I think this year, we are going to see probably interest rates hikes or repo rate hikes from the Reserve Bank. Mm-hmm. So people are not going to be taking out money or borrowing as much. So it's going to change some consumer behavior. So that may be the positive from that. But at the same time, people who have currently who have debts, they may experience some issues
horrible.
As well. Yeah, so,
you know, so I
it's
mean,
a mixed bag of goods.
Even with the ANC kind of losing ground as they did in the last elections, that's still going to happen. But, you know, I always say this, is that unfortunately for a lot of people, they look out there and they don't see viable alternatives. Hmm. And I'm very sad to see what's happened in the past couple of days at Action SA. Mm-hmm. So straight out the gates, there's already trouble in paradise, you know, so they're supposed to be getting ready for 2024, and already there's the kind of like a little bit of factionalism. You know, Makosi Khoza has been asked to step down, because first she came out to say she will be stepping down because of her duties at the Ethekwini Metro. And then out comes a statement from the party saying, actually, no, she's been asked to step down. So already, you know, it's like, like, guys. And this for me is one of the things that then is always a worry. You know, we talk about all of the various little things. One of the reasons, and what that does is it means less people show up. Less people show up for the elections because they see nobody that they can vote for, and they don't want to give their vote to the ANC. And democracy, unfortunately, is the will of the many who vote.
Yeah.
And again, you know,
So Pums, because we're running out of time, I'd like to just quickly move on to the state capture report, because it is the central news story, and we would be remiss, even though there's lots of other stuff.
Give me a chance.
Yeah, no, but if I don't, I mean, like Duma and Jonathan, we could have talked about America, we could talk about China, we could talk about Boris Johnson, who's on the ropes at the moment. There's a lot we could cover, but I do feel like in South Africa at the moment, like the state capture report is the big news. It was the first part of it's been released now. Pums, you've got some numbers and you've got some information there. Just set the story up for us and then we can maybe throw in one last comment each.
Okay, so this is part one. So it's a trilogy that's coming your way. It's a lot like The Lord of the Rings. So and part one is what's come out. And part one is not a small document. It's over 800 pages of document. But if you consider that over the 400 days that the commission sat and listened to evidence, they have a total of 1,731,106 pages of documentary evidence. That is the evidence I'm saying to you. Shamila Badoyi and her minions, that's the stuff that they should be like getting, pulling apart and writing the charge sheets. Because the just reading this first page, the first session, as unbelievable the kind of stuff that's in there. And I think one of the things that, and I've been doing a lot of reading of this document and kind of cross-referencing and looking at what other countries have done. Mm-hmm. We're not the first ones, guys, to have a commission of this nature. We always see in kind of in the US on C-SPAN when they have all of their commissions and listening to their commissions. The difference is that what that DA does, that the NPA is not doing, is they're not taking this evidence and sitting down and constructing a case that they can take to court and win. That's what they need to be constructing, cases that they can take to court and win.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the evidence. It's all been there, but there is no will.
Yeah.
I told you guys this when Shamila Badoi came on board. There is no will in her office. And I know she's going to come out and say, listen, I don't have capacity. The NPA has been gutted. I need more time. Bullshit. It's political will that she needs to try these cases. And it doesn't have to be.
I think she just needs to be fired. We've given this woman so much time and so much rope, and she's just been.
It's kind of like when we had the TRC. I think this is a little bit like when we had the TRC. Not everybody went to jail. Not everybody went to jail, but some big fish went to jail.
Yeah.
You know, some big fish kind of were. And there was a sense that something is happening, something has happened. That's what we need here. We need to see action. You need to see action.
Jonathan, what do you say? What do you say about this state capture report?
Look, I don't think anything will happen. I mean, obviously, they were always going to find that Sure, they've got the evidence, as Pumi points out, but the reality is that we all knew this was going on already. One of the world's best airlines was run into the ground by Dudumieni. That was an obvious fact. You could see it happening in front of your eyes. I think there's something more complex going on. So in the South African context, there's a cultural issue. So even if we had a government change today, you know, even if you put Action SA or the DA or whoever into power, we've got a cultural issue going on in this country in the way we do things. So let's take this example and use the state capture at the same time. So the way tenders work in this country is completely abnormal to running any kind of proper system or any kind of country. The state capture report may be useful to some people as bedtime reading. But the reality is that all that did was it was another way to create tenders. So it cost R1 billion to put that little sham on. It cost R1 billion. What does that mean? Why did it cost R1 billion? Well, it didn't cost R1 billion to pay Judge Zondo or any of the people taking notes or asking questions. And that doesn't include the legal fees, by the way. So it's more than R1 billion. What that billion was rental of the space. It was rental of the people doing the sound and the lights. It was rental of the people doing the catering. Now, when you start understanding this and you understand that only certain people get to do those things for these specific events that are created, you understand the economic relationship that has been set up between the government and its service providers, and only specific people and specific service providers. And that culture is not going to disappear. The second culture that is a problem is a global culture, one of a lack of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
We are now admitting 2 years in that we've made major mistakes with a global pandemic, many of which we shouldn't have made. We're admitting that in South Africa, we've made major mistakes in the government. There are people who have made major errors.
Mm-hmm.
And none of these people, for the most part, are going to go down. They may pick a fall guy here or there. But the reality is the world suffers from a lack of accountability. Nobody ever falls on their sword anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And if they refuse to fall on their sword, nobody has their head chopped off. And until we fix these fundamental problems in our behavior, both in South Africa and globally, nothing will get better. Because unfortunately, humans are creatures of consequence. And until there are consequences for bad actions, nothing changes and nothing improves and evil thrives.
Dumo, you get the last word. The state capture report?
Well, I'm glad it's, the first part has been released. I'm going to enjoy reading a bit of it. But I don't
You think, are the only one. You and Pumi are the only two who are actually going to enjoy it.
Yeah, just to see what's happening. You know, we need some entertainment once in a while, right? Mm. And I think ultimately, I don't think charges will be made. I could be wrong on that. I mean, people will be arrested. Something's going to happen. But ultimately, you know, the cycle's going to keep on going, you know. As Jonathan mentioned, the tenders are just going to keep on being made and stuff, and people are still going to benefit. So I think ultimately this is just another, you know, another saga that'll just keep us occupied for a while, and then the next one's going to come up. Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. You've really made me feel very optimistic. I came into this year with all kinds of energy, and now thanks to you three, I'm ready to slit my wrists.
No, but the energy, you know what, the energy that you have coming into this year is exactly what we need. We need, Gareth, there are 60 million South Africans. If we had 60 million South Africans with exactly that kind of energy to do something and change something. Okay, so let's minus 400 people in Parliament, minus the 65 people at the NEC. So, but what I'm saying, okay, let's just on the balance of it. If we just like took 2 million South Africans.
Right. Okay. You don't need a majority, actually. You just need a very, very motivated minority. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, we can make things happen. Energy.
Well, and the reason why these conversations are important is the more people know, the more angry we can be and use that anger to change things. That's why we have this conversation.
Next week, Thursday, I'm in Cape Town, and I'm talking to a bunch of really smart financial, you know, whiz kids. These are like people who move around enormous amounts of money. And I've been asked to tell them why I think South Africa is still a really, really rich and interesting place, and why they've got to watch it carefully, even if they don't necessarily put as much money into it as they might have in more politically stable or economically foreseeable times. And my take on this is quite simple. Like, during lockdown, South Africa has been one of the very best places to be if you have means, right? And I still look at this, and my own experience has obviously colored this enormously. But I do think when you look at, number one, how you could pretty much in this country do anything you want without worrying about it. It's the Wild West, right? And that goes for starting a little spaza shop, starting a little confectionery stand on the side of the road, selling stuff in a stall in the middle of Joburg. Nobody's followed the rules. In the townships, we've seen an enormous amount of productivity and of ingenuity and of industry coming out of people during the most difficult of times, when everyone is being squeezed. And Jonathan, you mentioned, you know, this idea that poor people have suffered the most, and that's absolutely true. But mostly, also in this country, nobody's cared what the government has done. Nobody cared what their rules were. People carried on with their lives. We are probably the best example, because I don't think the U.S. is this anymore, of an actual free market system, even if it's only the cash economy that you know, goes beneath the covers. Even if it's only the cash economy that big corporations can't participate in necessarily. Ordinary South Africans, because they're still alive, like the majority of us, somehow we made it through, even if we had very little at the beginning of this. Somehow that resilience is just, it's mega, man. I mean, I can't believe the number of people who've actually got things going and been keeping things going during the last 2 years. It's been phenomenal to see the levels of industry and genius that have come up by people who've been pressured by stupid rules, by fear, by the media, by irrational decision-making, by an economy that is geared to actually work against entrepreneurs, and yet they've come up. There's got to be something to that. There's got to be a reason that we look to ourselves and we find ourselves extraordinarily resourceful and resilient. I think it's a positive story, and I have to remember that in those moments where we look at politicians and we look at the world and we look at the economy and we feel down because we think we're being put upon. I think we're okay. I actually think we're damn fine. Would you rather be in Australia right now? Would you rather be in the UK right now? No, thank you.
Resourceful and resilient. That's who South Africans are. We just have to have that energy. We just have to keep the energy up and not give up.
And stop looking for a savior. So, it's not going to happen. You are it.
100%. And that's why stop treating the government as your parent. You're 100% right, Gareth. There's lots to be positive about. But it's what I've been always saying is there's lots to be positive about as an individual. You can do anything almost that you want in the world as an individual. Mm-hmm. You do not need the government to help you. The government is a hindrance, not a harm. As Reagan said, the nine most scary
words.
And terrifying words in the English language are
I'm here from the government.
I'm here to help.
Yeah, right.
So you know, when we talk about these reports and we say things are bleak, yes, they're bleak from a government perspective. They're always going to be bleak from a government perspective. Because governments, by their very nature, tend towards trying to gain more power over people, and to do that, they have to do quite nefarious and often bad things. But the reality is as an individual, if you basically spend your life understanding that the government is not there to help you, and you need to get on with it yourself. Yeah, so Africans are incredibly industrious because that's what they had to do. We've had to do basically since the formation of the state, right?
Either you do that or you don't survive. It's that simple. So let's all survive this year, and if we can, we'll even maybe get beyond survival to thriving. Let's see what's possible. I do believe in it, and I think that all three of you, despite the fact that you've been very realistic, some would say cynical, but very realistic this morning. Thank you for your time. Dumo Denga, great to see you. Jonathan Witt, awesome to have you on the show again. And Pumi Mashiho, thank you very much. Very good.
See you next week, guys.
Cheers.
We'll be back next week for more of The Burning Platform. Cheers. Have a good Thursday. CliffCentral.com.